For KOSU News, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time for This Week in Oklahoma Politics with Republican political consultant Neva Hill and ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel. A state lawmaker's bill to tighten laws on hoods and disguises is getting national attention. Ryan, let's start with you. What do you think of Senator Don Barrington's so-called hoodie bill?
This bill touches on a whole host of civil liberties and civil rights issues, from First Amendment speech issues where you've got folks exercising their political speech in an anonymous fashion so that they don't have to be afraid of retribution or retaliation from an employer or someone else, to privacy issues, to a bill that's so overly broad and so vague that it virtually invites over-policing and selective enforcement. This is a bill in search of a problem. You know, we've had a law on the books for over 90 years that's criminalized the use of disguises whenever you're trying to engage in criminal activity. So you wear a ski mask to rob a bank. That's already illegal. What this does is it extends those criminal laws to lawful activities of civilians.
Neva.
Well, and I think the interesting thing is this is one of those bills that gets attention because people know the legislature's coming back in session and we need to start talking about what they're going to be putting forward as far as legislation. And the nutty ones seem to get the attention first, and you know, you get it strikes the national nerve, it's the craziest of crazy in the red states, and all of the stuff that gets you the national headlines that aren't very, you know, aren't very flattering. But Ryan is exactly right. I mean, when you look at this, I mean, the bill basically already exempts most situations where people would use hoodies in public anyway, except to commit a crime. So it really is, in my view, much to do about nothing, and I think it will not get a very long look at the legislature.
Yeah, if we won't be talking about this in May. I normally don't like to place bets on the legislature because they're not very predictable, except for when you don't want them to be predictable.
It'll be good for one or two demonstrations,
right,
and it'll be over.
Yeah.
So.
Well, now, earlier this week, Republican Attorney General Scott Pruitt got a request from those in his own party asking him to end his lawsuit against Colorado over legalized marijuana. Neva, these are conservatives concerned about states' rights and the 10th Amendment. Do they have a point here?
Well, not if they listen to Attorney General Pruitt, who basically said, look, I'm a states' rights guy, and his lawsuit challenge, he says, is really directly dealing with the portion of the Colorado law that affects Oklahoma's interstate trafficking of marijuana. Now, you know, Representative Ritz and others say that no one's come forward with any real statistical proof saying that there is an issue with the trafficking problem. But I think what Attorney General Pruitt was trying to point out is, look, I want to make the distinction. I want to be able to communicate with you folks at the legislature, and let's don't get confused and try to embroil this into a much higher dialogue. And I think there was some real ramped up rhetoric in this whole discussion with some of the news releases and the flurry that went about this week. So that's unfortunate. I think when they really cooler heads prevail, they get to the table, they'll work this out, and they'll see that perhaps the Attorney General's office has some very legitimate issues that need to be pursued, as is being done in the state of Nebraska as well.
Ryan, Representative Mike Ritz says if this goes through, then it could have an impact on many of the arguments that Oklahoma has made in states' rights. What are your thoughts there?
Well, absolutely. And, you know, I've kind of made a career out of challenging state actions that run afoul of the U.S. Code or United States Constitution. But here, with the Controlled Substances Act, you know, the preemptive language in the Controlled Substances Act is very narrow, is very explicit, and I don't think that what Colorado is doing or Washington or any other state that has created a regulatory scheme around adult use, recreational use of marijuana or medical marijuana runs afoul of the Controlled Substances Act. Now, we are a long ways away, or likely a long ways away, from the Supreme Court overhearing this. You know, their grant of leave for original jurisdiction in cases like this often takes over a year. So I think that the litigation here could be drawn out. We won't likely have an answer from the Supreme Court for a long time. In the meantime, if the state of Oklahoma is really concerned about these costs, and I think that they're, I would contest whether or not we're actually realizing these actual costs anyways, but even if we are, we've got a much easier solution here than litigation. It's to stop enforcing insane drug laws in the state of Oklahoma. What Attorney General Pruitt's actually done is he sent a letter to the Supreme Court saying, "Dear Supreme Court, Colorado's new sane, rational drug laws getting in the way of the enforcement of our insane drug laws." So, we've got a solution here,
and it's
a legislative or a referendum solution here in Oklahoma that doesn't require us to go to the Supreme Court.
See if that one changes over the next session. But now, lawmakers showed up to the Capitol on Tuesday to elect their leaders, and Governor Fallon makes her second inaugural address this Monday. Ryan, what are your thoughts on the upcoming legislative session?
Yeah, I think at the beginning of every legislative session, we'll hear these bills like the Hoodie Bill and some of these other bills that get a lot of national attention. But the real issue every legislative session, and this one more important than ever, is the budget. I think that we're starting off with an actual shortfall of around $300 million if you throw in the cost of the tax cut this year. But I would argue that it's probably closer to $500 million whenever you looked at unfunded liabilities with the Oklahoma Healthcare Authority and Medicaid, with the Department of Human Services, and the litigation obligations that we have there. This is it's frightening. The idea that our legislative leaders can calmly say, "Well, we're just going to have to figure out how we can live without these services," I think really misses the point that we are facing a structural deficit that's going to make it not just difficult this year, but for maybe a generation in Oklahoma to meet its obligations to its people.
Neva, unlike with the U.S. House of Representatives, both the leaders here had no problems. House Speaker Jeff Hickman and Senator President Pro Tem Brian Bingaman got elected without a problem.
Right.
Leadership hasn't really changed much. What are we expecting? Is there going to be any changes at all this year?
Well, I think we'll see some changes. You always do in a new administration, and even though it's not changing of the guard and personalities, it is an opportunity for kind of another 4-year stretch, and in the life of the legislature with the new speaker in the House, I think we're seeing Speaker Hickman basically be fairly bold right up front, saying that one of his goals is to really do what Ryan's talking about, get a better management of state finances. And I think when he starts talking about the $1.7 billion in tax credits, looking at them, seeing do they really make Oklahoma economically competitive? Do they do what they're supposed to do, or do we need to wind some of those down? I think the other thing he pointed out is that the off-the-top earmarking, where you basically got lawmakers appropriating really only about 44% of the incoming budget, which when you look at that revenue, I mean, you're talking $3 billion that is already, already kind of set. I mean, whether it's roads and bridges, education, whatever it happens to be, but there's a lot of money that's just automatically, being dumped into some of these accounts. And I think they're going to have to get much more much more rigorous in looking at where the dollars are. The money is there, and there's money to be moved around and certainly more efficiently used for the services that the Oklahomans want and expect from state government.
And talking about money for state government, gas prices continue to fall across the state, which is good news for drivers, but not so good news for Oklahoma. Now, on Wednesday, Treasurer Ken Miller said Oklahoma's economy continues to grow. But Neva, at what point should we be worried about layoffs, empty oil fields, and cuts to state services like roads and schools?
Well, I mean, I think being very forthcoming with looking at the prospects that every national economist and every report that you see, certainly Oklahoma is on the list of the folks that are going to be most severely impacted, over the long haul. I think the difference in Oklahoma may be that having still, even though it's been some years, I mean, we remember what the devastation is from the collapse of the oil and gas industry. And I think with natural gas and some of the other things that are in the mix more heavily now, I think that Oklahoma, unlike maybe states like Louisiana and others who also their budgets are severely cramped when the oil and gas impact comes, I think the legislature, this is a time to really stand up and be courageous and do the right things and make allowances for the fact that the dollars may not be what they had hoped for, but right now I don't think it's the sky is falling as much as it is let's be very careful about what we do in the future.
Ryan.
Yeah, I think we're already hearing reports about layoffs in the private sector. There's really no signal that oil prices are going to rebound. And even if they do rebound, and this short-term fall will have an impact on state revenues. I think it's going to have an enormous impact on our private sector. The idea that Oklahoma is somehow recession-proof is going to be challenged here. You know, this, I think we've created this myth that we can somehow withstand any sort of economic turmoil at the national, international level, and that's just not the case. When you have an economy that is so tied to one or two sectors, and one of those sectors begins to fall, as we do here in the energy sector, it has an enormous ripple effect across the entire economy. And those state services that have been cut and are going to continue to be cut as a result of budget shortfalls are going to be needed more than ever. Education, mental health, healthcare, as more Oklahomans are going to be dependent upon those services when the when and if a recession does come, and even if it does, even if we don't have an all-out recession, the demand is going to increase, and the ability of us as a state to deliver those services to Oklahomans is certainly going to fall during this legislative session.
By this time next week, Oklahoma will have executed its first person since the botched execution of Clayton Lockett last April. Ryan, your thoughts?
This is the first execution with these new ridiculous protocols that really represent the state doubling down on secrecy. You know, they've reduced the number of media witnesses. They've given the director total discretion when to close the blinds, to turn off microphones. You know, this is, you know, we had an execution process that's been conducted in secret for a long time. Now we've just added another layer of secrecy on top of it. So, you know, we know that the state has actively misled the people of Oklahoma about what happened in the botched execution of Clayton Lockett. It's taken us a long time, and we still don't know the true level of incompetence that was on display there. But we know some of it now, and it's taken us a long time now. If there is any incompetence in this execution, which I think all executions by their nature are incompetent, but beside that point, if there is, it will be even longer before the public knows the full truth.
Neva, if this doesn't go smoothly next Thursday, is there going to be another backlash to executions in Oklahoma?
Well, I think we would have to expect that based on past history. But I would submit that I think it is incumbent upon the Department of Corrections to do the job that they are, you know, that they are instructed to do, and that that they can carry forward, hopefully, and do what they've been asked to do in a manner that, even though we may disagree whether or not the death penalty is and should be the law, it is. It has been used in Oklahoma since 1977. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, we've already, 194, I believe, men and women that that we've executed in the state penitentiary in Oklahoma. So, you know, I would hope that we get past the just the total talk about just botched executions, and we see the see this carried out in a manner that is proper, and that we minimize this notion that there is secrecy or other things that are not not proper.
Ryan and Neva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.